I sort of soon fell in love with audio and how perfect it is, how human voices are so have such range in all circumstances.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we bid farewell to NPR's Renee Montagne. A familiar voice for decades on these airwaves is signing off.
Economic pressure seems to be the West's main weapon against Russia. Although
President Bush goes to New York tonight for the opening of the United Nations.
Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta is in Iraq today to attend a ceremony known as... Joni Mitchell, thank you for coming in the middle of the night to have this conversation.
Oh.
Fellow Night Owl.
Thanks for having me.
Renee Montagne, who joined NPR in 1981 and hosted both All Things Considered and Morning Edition, is stepping down after thousands of interviews, overseas reporting trips, and more than a few journalism awards. But before she goes, she's here to look back and ahead. Renee Montagne, welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So can we talk you out of this?
Well, that is the sweetest thing to say. It's kind of fixed. I can't turn around now. I'm out the door, pretty much. Thank you for putting it that way. You know, NPR, once NPR, always NPR. 90% of my friends are NPR people. So I'll still be, in a sense, around, but not on this air.
You know, you've been doing it for so long, and since the news has been announced, I know you've been kind of, you know, taking a trip down memory lane to an extent. Were there parts of your career that you had forgotten about or highlights that came back during the last few days?
Yes, actually. Well, let's put it this way. I didn't ever spend very much of my time looking back. I didn't have time for starts, but also just wasn't my, you know, wasn't my personality. So when I did look back, I was a little overwhelmed, actually, with how much was done. I mean, you've been listening to tapes and whatnot, just like you just played. I was so delighted to hear the Joni Mitchell, which I hadn't forgotten, but oh, right, she came in at midnight because they couldn't get her for at 11, and they finally said, well, Renee can't be here at 11 because she's overnight. And they said, well, why don't you just bring her at midnight? It was the only feature I ever did. At midnight, like that, she came in the building. Was
no
with
pressure.
Me. Yeah, no, it was wonderful. She was so charming. It was her moment, and actually, so was I. I'm wide awake at midnight. So we had a good old time, you know. And actually, it turned out so well that we rolled it 2 days in a row, which is very unusual. But yeah, I guess sort of my peak things. It turned out to be about six things, you know, for my father. Was a young sailor at Pearl Harbor, and I did a 60-year interview with him, but I recreated the situation, right? And then another one 20 years later, and by then he'd passed. And those are really right next to my heart, right? But so are all the others. I did remember one thing with Joni Mitchell, which is Paul McCartney once serenaded me just before the interview. Don't walk away, Renee.
That's pretty cool.
He literally walked in over a long walk to the couch singing that song. It was so sweet. I was startled. I forgot that until I heard that tape again.
You were there, obviously, for so long. What kept you at NPR all these years?
Several things. One, the work was amazing. I mean, I couldn't ask for more. I hadn't, as a child, looked or a young person thinking I'm going to be a journalist or certainly not a radio journalist. But when I started doing it, which was almost by accident and end of college in a little funky radio station in San Francisco, I sort of soon fell in love with audio and how perfect it is, how human voices are so have such range in all circumstances. That was that. It was also, I came into NPR at a time when it was just growing, and I would have been counted as one of the people who helped build it. And at every turn, there was something more wonderful that was happening to NPR, you know, all the way, you know, through new shows, the NPR West building out in a whole other newsroom out in Los Angeles where I was based. But I would say, if I had to say one main thing, the people here. The people here are so amazing. People are really solid values about the facts, about getting it right, but also about finding stories that needed to be told that maybe weren't being told elsewhere. Long form in this world is 5 minutes plus. Mm-hmm. In fact, at certain points, you could say 3 minutes plus. And really, the people, decade after decade, it's hard to say that it doesn't feel like, it feels like about 5 years but that I've been here. But actually, it's been, the people I know here have become all at all levels, you know, of interaction. Either I super honor them and I'm just thrilled to be working next to them, or in so many cases, my friends. Sometimes lost friends. I heard from one just lately because she heard that I was, you know, leaving. And but really, it's kind of weird to say, but probably 90% of all the people I know in friends are from NPR at some point in my life.
Wow.
I mean, and the stations. Hey, listen, I've spent a lot of time visiting stations, right? And I contribute to three myself as a listener, two in Los Angeles and one in Honolulu in Hawaii. And that's a whole other circle of people that I know. So it was a world for me very early on, and it is now as I'm leaving.
That actually brings up something else I wanted to ask you, which is, you know, this has often been the case over the time of your career, but public radio is in kind of a jam right now. I wonder what you think about the situation it's in as you're leaving, and whether you think we as a system should be, you know, doing anything differently.
I would say this. It's always a little complicated about when, because I've lived through several of these. It might be in most people's memory, they wouldn't be much thinking of it. But, I mean, back in 1983, when I was a freelancer, the only reason I didn't lose my job was because I didn't have one. But they had a huge layoff because Ronald Reagan had followed through on his threat to, stop the government, the CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, from paying NPR. And at that point, it was, I can't remember the exact number, but it was a high level of what, and you know, the money that NPR took in. And in fact, it zeroed out pretty much. It was on its way to zeroing out, and it led to an almost bankruptcy. And you know, we were survived by that because even then, people gathered around some very big names like Walter Cronkite at the time. I mean, very big names put op-ed. I don't know if he personally did an op-ed, but you know, op-eds in the New York Times, Washington Post. So I mean, like I said, I you know, marched on because I was still there. But then, you know, it happened again at least twice more. It used to be a regular thing, actually, every 10 years, about every 8 years, the Republicans. But then it turns out a lot of Republicans in a lot of small towns and a lot of cities all around the country loved NPR themselves and loved being on the air and didn't want their constituents to be deprived of it. So this one is a lot more complicated because there's all other layers about how media is changing and listenership. And I wouldn't, I hate to say this, I shouldn't predict anything, and I'm leaving, so don't hold me for this. I don't think much will come of any kind of congressional targeting because, again, by the way, if people don't know this, NPR gets like 0.5% of federal dollars. The rest goes to stations. They kind of, you know, there's still money going into the system, but it's going straight to all the stations. So the stations really, you know, it matters for them. So what you're really thinking about here is it matters for stations. And there's a lot of supporters out there. So, you know, so I'd say I think it'll come right, but I can't deal with the larger historical changes, like people not being in their cars, things like that. You know, that's a big deal, and that's out of my sphere.
Where is the strangest place you've been recognized by your voice?
mostly at a cash register. If I talk long enough, people recognize my voice. I have never had the Susan Stamberg, you know, experience, or even Robert Siegel, if, as people remember him, of like, whoa, that voice is behind me on the bus. You know, like, you know what I mean? Whereas me, if they're looking at me and talking to me, I've been to dinner parties where at a certain point somebody leans over after a while and says, are you Renee Montaigne? You know, like, you know the first name of the people, but you don't know what they do.
Right.
So there, I don't know if it's weird, dinner parties, cash registers, it all involves me talking for a while.
Well, Renee Montaigne, congratulations, and I'm glad to hear that you'll be around, as you say, and I wish you nothing but many mornings of sleeping in going forward.
Ah, thank you, Ian. Appreciate it. And thank you for having me, and thank all your listeners. Know that we love you here at NPR.
Okay, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pekes.